Welcome back. It's Tom Bell here, and I am super pumped about this episode. This podcast is bringing you all things purpose, passion, and mindset. And on today's show, I have Rick Schnabel, my person who trained me as a life coach. He is a brain untrainer. Super excited to have you on the show, Rick, and welcome.
Hey, how are you, Tom? Good to see you again.
Good, great to see you too. So, I came across your book. I'm walking past a bookshop, and as I often do, I walked in and had a little look at the self-help section. I'm always like the energizing books that are in there. And this one book just jumped out at me. And I know the cover has since changed because you have multiple books, but The Gold Writing and Life Beyond Limits, I think it was from memory or Infinity Belief was the theme throughout the book, which really struck a chord with me. I've got an Infinity tattooed on my ribs, and I've devoured that book. And I don't normally read too many books, but I really did devour the book. And then I reached out to you, and the next thing I'm flying to Melbourne and realizing a dream to become a qualified life coach, and that's really set the tone of my life. So massive thank you to you. But for people who have not yet come across you, could you tell us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, actually, I'll refer to that book because I was working in marketing for News Limited many, many years ago. And I was taking a group of people over to Hawaii. And when I was in Hawaii, I was working with a cameraman at the time, and we were walking through the market. And I felt this little tap on my shoulder, and it was this little Asian lady who was tapping me on the shoulder. And she said, "I really need to tell you something." And I said, "Excuse me?" It was the oddest thing you could be. "I really need to tell you something." And, you know, perfect stranger. And she said, "Look, I'm a psychic, and there are two things that you really need to know." And I went, "What?" And I said, "Look, I'm working at the moment." And she said, wait here, raced off, came back, popped a business card in my pocket. And she said, "Come and see me." And so, of course, when everyone left Hawaii, I was going to stay there for another week on my own. And I went straight to this little beret where she was running, you know, her readings. And the two things that she wanted to tell me, she said, the first thing is, "You're going to write a book that's going to change the way the world thinks." And I thought, "What?" And then she said, "But the most important thing I need to tell you is that you think that you're stupid. And because you think you're stupid, you're going to make the language far too verbose, you know, words that most people don't know. And you're going to do that to prove that you're intelligent, you know, and make up for what you think you're not." And that really struck a chord with me. And I felt my emotions coming up through my body when she said this. And I thought, "Oh my God, this is bang on." You know, if I was to write a book, I would do exactly that. Years ago, when I was a teenager, I used to write poetry, and I used to look in the dictionary for the most complicated word I could find. And then I would write the poem to integrate this complicated word in this poetry. And it was exactly for what she said, you know, because I thought that I was stupid, you know, because I was told through most of my education that I was stupid. And of course, I believed it. And this belief really changed when I was running an advertising agency, and I discovered that I wasn't stupid, that I had formed this entire business on percentages and fractions and complicated mathematical formula, and that I had built this whole business, you know, on my own, essentially. And that book finally came. I had an epiphany. I was, you know, prior to me teaching you life coaching and neuro-linguistic programming, I, of course, learned it myself. And my big challenge, thinking I was stupid, was actually becoming a success, a financial success in my life. And I never got there. I just kept hitting this glass ceiling, and I struggled financially for a lot of my life. And I got to a turning point in my life where I finally got married. I had my first child. And I was working in a job that I was frankly terrible at, which was sales. And I was working with a coach, and the coach said to me that the reason that you're having such difficulty with sales is because you have a belief system that you don't think highly of salespeople. So if you finally become a success in sales, then you won't highly think of yourself either. And from that particular perspective, that was my turning point, because I was down to my last $27. That's all I had in the bank. Whatever I had in my wallet at the time, I could guarantee wouldn't be much. And I was really at a turning point. I really had to do something different, because I'd been there before. This was a pattern for me, you know, make some money, lose it all, make some money, lose it all. And I was learning neuro-linguistic programming. I was working with a coach, and all of a sudden some things just all came together. And I went from being the worst salesperson in the organization in the 3 months after learning neuro-linguistic programming and working with a coach, that I became the best in all of America and all of Australia. And I grew so fast that the sales director was in Sydney at the time, I was in Melbourne, and he flew from Sydney to Melbourne to investigate me, because he thought, this can't be true. You cannot go from worst.
You rigged the system somewhere.
Yep, I'm doing something illegal or something wrong. And I remember he took me out and he said, you know, tell me you're not doing anything illegal. You know, how have you achieved this? And I started telling him, oh my God, I've learned so much about mindset. I've shifted my own mindset. I've improved my communication systems. I understand there's 4 different styles of English, and I've mastered this, and I'm using this in my sales. And he said, stop the crap. That didn't resonate with him. Although it was true, it just didn't resonate with him. And he said, tell me you're having more meetings. And I said, yeah, I'm having more meetings. And he said, I thought so. Excellent. And then he flew back to Sydney. But the thing was that it was a real game changer for me. And, you know, then, of course, this is how the idea of that first book that you read came to me, because a good friend of mine, I started teaching him how I knew how to shift your wealth mindset. And it started working for him. And he was running a sales team, and he started teaching his staff what I was teaching him, and he started getting greater and greater success. And he said, oh my God, Rick, you have to put this in a book. And I went, there it is. There's the book. And I wrote it in 3 months. It just poured out of me. And then I spent about another 17 months, you know, editing it and refining it. And then I put it to Pam McMillan, and they liked it. They liked the idea. And then it was published. And that was really the beginning of a complete change to my entire world. You know, I started having people coming to me and saying, teach me how to do it. And then other people would say, you know, can you teach me how to teach other people how to do it? And so I went from being a coach to a trainer to a trainer's trainer. And that was the beginning of everything. And everything changed from that point.
And you're having quite a ripple effect out in the world, like, you know, from a place where, you know, at News Corp or you know, whatever the places were beforehand, and maybe like being good at it, but not really necessarily loving it, being in that position where you're running those patterns and you're making it, and you're losing it. Like the ripple effect now, like I am this morning doing an online course of yours. So I'm with you. Basically, it feels like I'm with you live learning from you, yet we're not together. And, you know, there's people all around the world right now, again, learning from you right now. And yet we're here engaged in this conversation. So, you know, you have had like this massive impact on the world. And now like you've been able to ramp that up to a point where it's kind of like the ripple effects of you having been here and still doing what you're doing are just absolutely massive. Do you ever sort of stop to think about like you living your purpose is just helping people all over the world live better lives and live their calling?
There are times when I guess you get excited by it, but, you know, for many, many years, I've been reading biographies of, you know, usually famous people, you know, musicians often. I love music. And something that I see as a common thread is that with most successful people, there is a bar that, you know, you're aiming for. And you'll go and you'll hit that bar And there's almost mild celebration around it because you recognize that there's another bar beyond that, or there's another mountain beyond that. And even though I've had a lot of success in helping people and have had that ripple effect, I still don't feel like it's enough, because my mission is to really wake people up. And I'm really proud to see so many other people doing this too. And I've had so many people come into my programs over the years that have said to me, you know, I'm going to make sure that everyone is really, really aware of what is really going into food, you know, and what is really, really going into our, you know, hygiene products, and what is really the truth about politics, or what is the real truth about, you know, the monetary systems and so forth. And what I want to see is I want to see more of that. I want to see people wake up, and people are now questioning, you know, what their diets have been for most of their lives, and are now taking a stand and saying, no, I'm not going to, you know, have fluoride in my toothpaste. No, I'm not going to have these modifiers in my food, and these, you know, colorings and flavorings and things, you know, that have got incredibly bad results. Now, the motivation there is that my motivation is quite different now. It was at first, it was, hey, I want to write this book. I want to turn it into a bestseller. And you get to this point where you hit that mark. And I was very excited when it turned into a bestseller. And then, of course, I learned a formula how to create other bestsellers. So all of my books became bestsellers. And I started to realize that it's more about system. It's more about knowing the system. And equally, you know, the title that I was given of Brain Untrainer, you know, happened numerous years ago. There was a gentleman who had multiple sclerosis, and he was a friend of mine. I worked with him at News Corp, and he had MS, but he didn't tell anyone that he had MS because he thought it would really jeopardize his career. And he was really going places, and he embarrassingly fell through a display, you know, at a pharmacy. And he was a very proud man, and he was almost a little disgraced by the whole episode and very embarrassed. And so he called me and he said, Rick, I really don't want to put this pressure on you, but I get a sense that with what you know, you can help me. Would you be interested? And I was more than interested. I thought this was a huge challenge. I had never helped anyone get out of an illness like MS or anything like that before. But the thing that I started to realize is that I had spent most of my life in advertising, learning about how people think, marketing, learning how segments think, sales, learning how individuals think. And now I had learned neuro-linguistic programming and life coaching and many other modalities. And I started to realize now I know how we tick, how we actually tick. And so I thought to myself, well, my first job is to find out how he came to have MS in the first place. You know, what was his belief system? What was his value system? You know, what was his history? What was going on in his head? And each time at the end of a session, I would recalibrate him. In other words, I would say, you know, from 0 to 10, how much do you believe you still have the symptoms of MS? And at the beginning, it was up around the 8s or 9s. And this was a long time ago, so I'm pretty sure it was around 8 or 9. It was very high. Then we finally got down to 1.5. It was our first fraction. And I said, so it was about the 5th session. And I said, so how do you feel right now in context with MS? 10, you totally have the symptoms of MS. 0, you don't. What's the first number that springs to mind now? And he came up with the number 1.5. And I said, wow, that's really interesting. So I started to learn this concept of secondary gain, you know, and I said to him, it's really interesting that you're now hitting the fractions. So I'm going to ask you an odd question. And the question is, what is the benefit that you get from having MS, multiple sclerosis? And he said, I don't have any, you know, there are no benefits you know, it's been terrible. And I said, just get that out of your mind for now. I want you to explore any benefits. And eventually he got to this point where he said, well, I work in a job for a long time. I get toxic. And when I get toxic, you know, meaning his symptoms ramp up. When I get toxic, I quit my job and then I go through a recovery process. And I said, what do you do when you're not working? And he said, well, you know, back then it was videos. You know, I watch videos, you know, I watch movies. You know, I go do courses, you know, I learn, I read books. And I go, wow, I'd love that life. That sounds pretty ideal to me. And I said, so what happens with things around the house? He said, well, normally my wife usually goes out to work and, you know, my only responsibility is cooking dinner. And I said, that's pretty ideal life. And then I did this technique with him to help him to get rid of that secondary gain. And that was it. It was gone. And he came to me and he said, you're not a coach. You're not even a trainer. He said, what you are is a brain untrainer. He said, I'm confused about whether I even had MS now. He said, I'm fully doubting that it was all in my head. And that's how I got the title Brain Untrainer. And I started to realize that, you know, I started helping then people with anxiety and depression. And there was this woman who had chronic fatigue syndrome. And I remember she came to see me on a Saturday morning. I had a clinic at the time. She walked in and I said, what are we working on? She said, I have chronic fatigue. And I said, okay, how do you know that? You know, prove to me you have chronic fatigue. So she spent a bit of time telling me her history, you know, symptoms and so forth. And what I discovered was this really interesting pattern. And the interesting pattern was that when she was a teenager, she was very studious. So she would, you know, study long hours into the early hours of the morning, you know, to do really well at exams. And her mother was very concerned about this incredible amount of dedication and commitment. And they believe that she wasn't getting enough vitamin B, I think it was. So she would go to the doctors regularly and get an injection of vitamin B. And then what would happen is the doctor would equally reiterate what her parents would say. And he'd say, you better be careful. You know, you've got to slow down. You know, you could get chronic fatigue, you know. And so this, you could get chronic fatigue, you know, kept happening. And then eventually she ran an events company. This is in her young adolescence. She started a business and she was working very, very late to put this event together. And she was, you know, again, right through the early hours of the morning. And she got to a point that she, the following day, once it was all over, she went to bed and she didn't get up. She stayed in bed and she stayed in bed for a whole day and then another day and another day and another day. And she was exhausted. She was tired. But she had this cycling idea that she had chronic fatigue. Now, what I discovered is if you believe you have something, you're going to look for evidence. She found the evidence. So therefore, tick, she was convinced she had chronic fatigue. Her doctor, of course, confirmed she had chronic fatigue. And I chatted with her and I did some brain untraining with her. And she walked out of that clinic on that morning without chronic fatigue and has never had it since.
Wow.
Because she started to realize that it was a belief system. And she enforced that belief system to such a degree that it became her pattern. So it was one of many, you know, people that I'd worked with that I started to realize there is such a link between how we think and what we do. And I know that a lot of people probably even listening to this think, yeah, of course, how we think determines what we do. But I still believe today in larger society, we're not investing enough in how we think. You know, we invest in what we think, you know, by chucking more data and information in there, but we don't invest enough in how we actually think. because how we think is thinking through filters. You know, we think through our belief filter, our values filter, our memories filter, you know, our decisions filter, you know, and all of these filters basically determine how we think. So even my program, where I was going from money, no money, was it wasn't what I was thinking, it was how I was thinking. And much of that really came back from my childhood, where I believed that I was stupid, where I believed that I wasn't as good as anyone else. And it was very, very low self-esteem sort of stuff type thinking. And that thinking, when I would get to that point where I would, you know, almost go broke or lose money, I would almost in my head think, yep, you deserve it. Yep, you're not smart enough. You know, come on. You know, someone's going to tap you on the shoulder in a moment and just go, you know, get out of that chair, you fraud. You know, and it was these sorts of things that are just neurological patterns. So that's, I guess, my mission. I really want to wake up the world. I want them to realize that if their life isn't what they want, then they need to change their thinking patterns.
Mm. So like you now have like a wizard, I suppose, in a way, like a life wizard. Not only can you transform others through language and chatting to them, you obviously have been able to transform your life over and over and over and continue to adapt and evolve. What are you doing through the hard times? Like, are hard times still hitting in your life? And then is it like a process you're going through to recognize it and then change it? What is that like for you?
Okay. I don't think I really have hard times like I used to have hard times. And it's not because, you know, my life is anything special or extraordinary. What it actually is it has a philosophy within it that when things don't work out, like, for example, at the beginning of this year, you know, my students' problems are my problems. My clients' problems are my problems, because they're coming to me and they're saying, how do I fix this? How do I change this? So I see that perhaps as a problem, and many other people might see that as a problem. But the thing that I have as an underlying philosophy under all of this is I really truly do believe that we are here to spiritually evolve, and we are here to ascend. And in order to ascend ourselves into a higher level of thinking, we have to abandon old ideas. For example, you know, one of my coaches, who is a very spiritual coach and probably keeps me very humble, is she will often tell me that, you know, she talks about the dimensions, you know, like based on science, you know, the law of vibration and frequency. So we know that equally emotions have frequency. Like, for example, shame has a frequency. It's been measured at about 20 hertz. So that's a vibration. And vibration is based on the height and the breadth. So for example, when we're in high stress, you know, we get a lot of height and they're very close together. When we're very calm, our brain waves, you know, seem to look like gentle waves. And the calmer we get, the less of this we get, the less of the spiking, you know, and so forth. So when we look at the first dimension, for something to vibrate very slow and low, we move into the rock kingdom, the crystal kingdom. Then when the vibrations go higher and faster, we move into the plant kingdom, being the second dimension. And of course, we can start seeing things move now, even though the rocks are moving, technically, you know, they're atoms swimming around, but we can't see them, and they appear because they're vibrating very low and slow. They appear solid like rocks, plants less solid, and they move. The third dimension is where we now enter into the kingdom, you know, being the mammal kingdom, the human kingdom, and so forth. That's the third dimension. We're vibrating faster and higher. And so what now happens is now things become invisible when we vibrate even higher. For example, the fourth dimension is considered to be the dimension of thought. That's where thought exists. And there is a lower fourth and a higher fourth. So, for example, in the lower fourth, many of the concepts are based upon fear. Things like anger, sadness, guilt, blame, shame, and all of those sorts of emotions are essentially derivatives of fear. People usually get angry because they can't work out how to fix something, and it's frustration. And it's usually a fear of not knowing what they need to do. Sadness is kind of an expectation that they're fearing their future. You know, there's just going to be like the past. There's going to be no different. So in order for us to ascend to the higher fourth dimension, what we have to let go of is we have to let go of fear. And when we let go of fear, we can actually ascend. And fear at the end of the day is typically an illusion. Like, for instance, if I lost all my money today, everything, all my assets, I wouldn't be fearful because I've got knowledge. You know, even if I was homeless, I would just sit on a street corner. I would probably be a little bit more innovative, and I'd put a card and, you know, I'd find something to scratch on that card, and I would put something like, "I'll change your life for a dollar." And I would have people pay me a dollar to do that. And then when my self-esteem grows a little bit more, that dollar would turn into $10. And then when my self-esteem goes even higher, it might turn into $100 for the same thing. And so most of life really is an illusion. And the philosophy that I live from now is that there are no problems. There's nothing good. There's nothing bad. There is just meaning that we place on these things. So, for example, that time when I was down to $27, and yes, I was in fear. I was freaking out. I was picturing, you know, living in an alleyway with my, you know, my then wife and young child. And it wasn't a good vision and it wasn't a good image, but it was motivating enough to get me to do the thing that I didn't think I could do. Like, I had to pay money. I had to get a loan to pay to learn my neuro-linguistic programming, to learn my coaching. And I didn't have that money. But it wasn't until I was at rock bottom that I actually did something about my life. So it was actually a really good thing because it was the beginning of me discovering how to change my life. It was the beginning of me writing my book. And then the joy of people reading it like yourself, you know, and then all of a sudden having you in my space where I could say, fantastic, let's do some work. Let's help you to help your life. And I love teaching coaches and trainers and speakers and authors because I know that everything I give them is going to have a ripple effect. It's going to go out and they're going to give more to others and so forth. And that's a massive expanding horizon. And so that philosophy that nothing is bad, it's just a lesson, that's all it really is, means that the bumpy road ahead is not so bumpy anymore. You know, that as crazy as it might sound, if things go belly up for whatever reason, you'll discover something. Like the beginning of this year with COVID, you know, I had numerous of my students, you know, reach out to me and said, Rick, can you please show us how to create online courses? Because what we can do is we can now go out and create online courses. And that might have seemed bad, but it was great. We ended up creating this amazing program. We've now got loads and loads of people in that program and new people as well. So I'm connecting with people I've never connected with before. And so, you know, your opportunity, I think wisdom is the greatest gift that anyone can give another person. And particularly when it's wisdom that's applied, you know, you've actually applied it. You really know that it works. It's not just something you've read in a book and haven't applied. And I think, you know, that's the philosophy that makes everything easy.
So if you were talking of that wisdom, then if you were to hop in a time machine and you go back to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell 18-year-old Rick?
I think I would whisper in his ear very quietly, everything's going to be okay. You know, because I had depression. I had a lot of anger in me because I was bullied as a kid, and you know, and we can create all these reasons for being who we are. And of course, I had lots of reasons to be who I decided to be. And I think I knew I had potential, but I was really scared that I would never realize that potential. And I also thought that, you know, I wasn't the guy that was the most confident in the group. You know, I wasn't the guy that was the most outspoken in the group. I wasn't the most assured person in the group. But what I later found out was all the other people that I thought were confident, assured, and had everything they needed to succeed didn't think they did. And I realized I was thinking just like everybody else. You know, most of us were thinking we're frauds, you know, we're never going to amount to anything, that life's not going to be as good as we think it could be, or it's going to be less than somebody else, and all these comparisons. And, you know, going back to what I shared earlier, when you ascend, you've just got to let go of all of that. You've got to let go of fear. You know, at the end of the day, the way I see it is that we've got to put as much value in the world as we possibly can by being the best that we can be, and then share that knowledge. And that's how we all move to that great space, that great place.
Mm.
You know, like if you're working with someone who's depressed, for example, they're going to sell you a story on why they are like they are. Other than that, they're going to look like a fool, even though they probably feel a bit of a fool at the time. But the thing is that what you've got to then do is you've got to sell them on another idea, and you've got to sell them that their idea actually, in the most graceful way, is a bit cockeyed, is not watertight. And you've got to start kicking the legs of belief out from under them and collapse that, so that they are then confused. And that's usually what happens. People, when you really kick out their beliefs, people get confused. And then once they're confused, because humanity hates being confused, you know, we want certainty more than air. And it's this desire for air that you can now add in new ideas, new concepts. It's almost like putting a rope in a dark hole. They're just going to go up the rope. Mm-hmm. And they're going to come out and they're going to see the light. And that is, in essence, what you're aiming to do. You know, you're aiming to help them to be able to see a different way, a different reality. Because, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that life is an illusion. It's the biggest illusion that we could ever read in a book, see in a movie. You know, it's full of fantasy. It really, really is. And it's full of drama, and it's full of stuff that typically just makes us feel like we're living. But I think real living is ascending all of that illusion. And that's a big pill. You know, it's certainly, you know, red pill, blue pill. It's a big pill to swallow, but it is certainly a pill that can transform a life.
So that's interesting then. So if you were to hop back in that time machine and you were to land at your 100th birthday, is that ascension, or, you know, you could tell me what it is that you would like to have achieved with your life looking back?
Yeah, I think the thing that I would like to achieve more than anything is I would like to be able to experience the worst and the best of life and not be affected by it. You know, I think that that's when you finally have ascended to an incredible place.
Mm.
You know, once upon a time, of course, because of my money stuff, you know, not having money when I was growing up and so forth, you know, I wanted to be a millionaire, you know, more than I wanted air. And when I got there, it was a buzz, you know, to find out that you're a millionaire is a buzz. But now it just doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. I got to a point in my life where I think I wanted things, and I was moving, And I said to my wife, I said, this is ridiculous. We're going to need probably 3 to 4 10-ton trucks to move us. And we have got so much crap, you know. And I went through my garage. I would see things that just took my fancy. And because I could buy them, I bought them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were still sitting there in the garage in a box, unopened.
Mm.
And I thought, this is crazy. And this actually got me away from that consumerist lifestyle. I just thought, this is ridiculous. This is what causes landfill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what is degrading life, you know, in essence. And I began to think that I don't want that. I really don't want that. And I don't think, you know, financial success really should be the goal. These days, I believe more in spiritual attainment, you know, getting to that point where you're just not fazed by things. And I still today, I'm not there. I still get triggered. You know, people will say things, I'll hear things, see things, feel things, and I still get triggered, but I'm certainly working on not being triggered as I was once. And I see that as my 100-year goal. But more so, I want to make sure that I leave so much behind that when I die, there are still all our courses online. There are still, you know, interviews like this that people can learn from and get value from. And, you know, and I just want to reach more and more people, and I want to touch more and more people so that they can get a sense of there is another way to live a great life. And it's not what you possibly thought it was.
I love it. I love it. And so people that might be listening to this, they're stuck, they're unhappy. You know, we want them to be able to live a life that they truly love. They want it. What would be your tips for them?
I think the number one thing is to get started is desire. You know, desire has a great power about it. You know, if you really contemplate what ideally you would want your life to look like, I used to, and still do from time to time, invest my final hour of sleep. You know, what I mean by that is you jump into bed. When you are in bed and you're about to sleep, your consciousness moves from beta level consciousness through to alpha. And alpha is, you're still awake, but you're almost in a meditative state. And then you finally then move to, you know, theta then delta. And when you're in theta and delta, you're asleep. Now, in the alpha state, before you fall asleep, it's a very hypnotic state. And in that state, it's a good state to dream. It's a good state to start thinking about what tomorrow you might do tomorrow, what tomorrow might bring, ideally what you want to create in your life. And on my road to what I call success is I used to see myself standing on a platform, which was a stage. The best stage that I could probably think of is in London or in England, Wembley. And I was up on the stage at Wembley and there were hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. And I was on a stage and I was sharing things with them. And that was the image that carried me through the tough times, the rough times, and the times where I needed that piece of inspiration. So I would really recommend that everyone creates some sort of picture in their mind or movie in their mind of ideally what is the life that they are aiming for. And then start asking themselves the more important question, which is why? Why do you want that life? You know, what is it that you're giving to yourself or others as a result of achieving or attaining that life?
And so if you can work out the why, and it's actually your why and not somebody else's, not because TV said you need to have a gold chain or a Range Rover or whatever it might be, if it connects with who you are and what your unique genius and the reason why you're here, then it's a vehicle that can carry you far and will help you get to where you need to be and over the ups and downs, because the journey will be worthwhile.
Absolutely. You know, the thing that we'll often do, and I find this with coaching, you know, the beginning of a coaching, usually a coaching program, you're asking your client, what do you want to achieve? You know, what is the goal of these coaching sessions? You know, what are we aiming for? What are we really aiming to do? Something that I find in the beginning is you're often coaching your client out of those goals because you realize that those goals really aren't theirs. They're their mothers, their fathers, their brothers, or somebody else's, or even society's goals. And, you know, it almost comes down to that narrow field of happiness that quite often a lot of people, I don't think, achieve happiness because they're actually trying to attain someone else's model of happy.
Mm.
And it's not really their model of happy because they don't know themselves well enough to really know what their model of happy actually is. And I've seen a lot of people over the years that I've coached that are very, very successful, you know, rock stars, movie stars. And some of them only went down that path because they were just trying to impress their brother or make up for the shortfall of, you know, how they felt within their family. I'm reading a book at the moment, Elton John's book, Me. And it's a great book, by the way. And he starts talking about his success. And he really knows himself very, very well, in fact. And what he's alluding to is that he was kind of chasing that reward of getting the love that he didn't get from his dad, getting the love that he didn't get from his mom. Because, you know, applause, or, you know, getting to the top of the charts or getting a platinum or gold record or whatever the attainment might be, was filling a hole within himself that in truth he could never really fill. Because, and this is a theme for many, many people, that the hole of not getting that love for their mother or father is usually so vast that nothing can really fill that void.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Wow, that's powerful, isn't it? So look, you know, I bet you and I could just talk all day, all week. And I really, really appreciate your valuable time and coming and taking some time to share with the people tuned into this one. But for people that might want to work with you as a coach or follow you on your journey, what's the best place for them to do that? Best way for them to get in touch?
Probably if they go to our website, which is lifebeyondlimits.com.au, that might be the best place because there's lots of freebies on there. There's lots of videos and things like that. And we like to put lots of, there's a free section there. If they want to grab as many videos as they want, they're all there for them. So that might be the best place.
Terrific, Rick. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and chat with us today.
You're welcome, Tom. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning in for another episode. Like, share, comment, subscribe, do all of that sort of fun stuff. I'm Tom Bell, and I'll talk to you soon.